The Sherwin-Williams Summer Sale is here. Get 30% off select paints and stains or 35% off our newest product, Emerald Symmetry, July 17th through the 27th. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Hi folks, welcome to another one of our political chats. I'm joined by Dan, and today we're going to be talking about the end of the Starmer Reich.
Oh.
The thousand-year Starmer Reich didn't come to pass.
No.
So the Stormtroopers are on suicide watch today. It's pretty bad.
But are we saved? Have we got a new Prime Minister and everything is going to be okay now?
Well, we have a new Prime Minister.
Right. But presumably all of those constraints that were set on Starmer that made him utterly hated, they're just gone now.
Well, you know what's really interesting is no, that's not the case.
Oh no! Oh, what a shocker!
Yeah, if you can imagine, things are going to get worse because weirdly, I've got a bit of a prophecy here. I think we're going to kind of we're going to miss Starmer, right?
Oh, definitely.
We're going to miss Starmer in that Starmer was a man of the system. He was like the last proper Blairite in Parliament who understood that the system was more important than the ideals. The system was to deliver the ideals, and if the system fails, then the ideals never come to pass.
Yes.
Whereas people like Andy Burnham and the sort of Angela Rayner.
Right? Oh, yeah.
People, the sort of like the soft left, they don't understand this, right? They think, well, we can just do the thing that we're being promised by the system. It's like, well, no, it doesn't work that way. And you're going to find out, like, essentially what I think we're going to move into is an accelerationist government at this point. Like,
yes, possibly.
Starmer was actually a real conservative for the Blairite order.
Well, you're always conservative about the thing that you value the most. That's only true. But I don't know if you remember, this is a few years ago now, but Welsh chap, leader of the Labour Party, bald with tufts of ginger, Neil Kinnock. There we go, Kinnock. Right, so do you remember back in whenever it was, I mean, this had been years ago, this probably would have been 90s, when he stopped being Labour leader, and was and he then went on Have I Got News For You. Now,
I can't remember it.
Yes. So, and basically what...
Sounds like something that would happen.
Yes. Now, basically, he went on that, and he had become this sort of figure of hate, figure of fun. Nobody liked him anymore, including Labour people. They didn't like him anymore. And he went on Have I Got News For You, which just goes to show how long that has been running. And he came across as funny, as personable. He could give good answers. He could you know, make jokes off the cuff, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, even me as a young right-winger, because I'm one of those weirdos that never went through a lefty phase. I've always been right-wing. In fact, if anything, I'm getting slightly less right-wing as I get older. I mean, these days I'd let most people off with a hanging, let alone, you know, what I used to think. Sure. But anyway, even I watched that and I thought, God, he's coming across well. He's doing all right. And all the Labour people who watched it were like, oh my God, why couldn't we have had that? Why couldn't we have had that? Now, that's going to happen to Starmer now. He's going to do all these interviews and he's going to be far more relaxed and funny, speaking off the cuff, personable, addressing issues, all that kind of stuff. And people are going to think, wow, he wasn't so bad. But there's a reason for that, right? Because if you're in the position of government and you make a quip, that could be a diplomatic incident.
Oh, yes.
If you try and think through solving a problem, that could become Treasury policy. By default. So you
I mean, Andy Burnham's had the example of this. So we shouldn't be so in hock to the bond markets.
Yes.
Suddenly, the bond market's crashing.
There is no way you can get away with that as a prime minister.
Yeah.
So all jokes are going to have to be pre-scripted. He can't address hypotheticals. He can't talk about... classically, in his case, he's always saying, oh, the North doesn't get enough resources. You could easily do that when you're mayor of Manchester. As soon as you're prime minister and you say that, well, that means you just pissed off Scotland, Wales and Southern England.
Yes.
Because, okay, well, if they're getting more, we're getting less.
Yes.
So what's going to happen is Starmer is going to get this massive boost of popularity because suddenly he becomes more personable and can just talk like a human being. But Burnham's going to get the exact opposite. Right. And it's going to be so stark for Burnham because he's not even a Westminster politician, or at least he wasn't when his rise of popularity was happening. So he could speak freely. And he's going to suddenly go into it. But the interesting thing is, right, and as you pointed out, which is what got me thinking about this, is Starmer was an obvious machine cog. He was a barrister. He spoke in these sort of legal terms. He addressed the preservation of the system itself. Whereas Burnham has built himself up to be the complete opposite of that. So you're kind of replacing the soulless, bureaucrat with what is supposed to be the People's Tribune. And then all of a sudden people are going to realise, hang on, we're not getting any of it. None of it is happening. I mean, the closest historical example that I can think of is going from Tsar Nicholas II to the early communist regime, where the people were like, yay, it's happened.
Yeah.
And then they continued most of Tsar Nicholas II's policies.
But also millions of people died.
Well, and also that, yes.
Yeah. I'm sure that millions of people won't die under Andy Burnham.
No.
But what will happen is the system... I mean, the thing is, right, I say that. You actually can't rule it out. Because if a series of actually mission-critical systems begin to fail because Burnham has made them fail, then actually there is the potential for millions of people to die. Like, you know, millions of people on the NHS, the pensioners, whoever else, right?
I mean, if the bond markets cut us off, then we can't run the hospitals, so...
Well, exactly. Yeah. So I'm sure that's not going to happen.
Mm.
But interesting... You are completely right about this. We are going to see Starmer looking more personable, and we already saw this in his last PMQs.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It notably better performance.
He seemed happier. Yeah.
Yes.
But really, it's about the things that Starmer didn't do that Burnham will do. I mean, for example, Shabana Mahmood and her immigration reforms tangibly did reduce immigration.
Mm.
Now, it reduced immigration from a raging flood to merely a river of immigration, but that is a reduction. Right, and that is something they can tangibly say. No, we got it down to 850,000 a year from 1.5 million a year.
I mean, to be fair, the Tories were peak performance athletes at cramming as much immigration through. So
yeah. So it's not exactly hard to do.
Yes,
but it is true that they did it. And so, like, Starmer had this natural kind of conservatism in him. It's like, well, this is bad for the system. Therefore, I'm going to reduce this. This is bad for the system. Therefore, I'm going to stop that. Burnham doesn't really care about the system, as his bond market quip the other day made out. Like, you can tell, but Burnham doesn't. He's not really a man who thinks like the system. He's thinking in the ideals of the system, and so he's going to try. Yeah, exactly. He's thinking the outputs, so he's going to try and apply his Manchesterism to the entire country, not realizing that one, that was just government bailouts, basically.
Yes.
And two, the entire country is not Manchester. And doesn't want to be Manchester. And actually,
well, the key thing about that is he could promise more money without having to find it.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Now he has to find it.
Yeah.
And where are you going to get that from?
And at the end of the day, if he was ever denied it, he could be like, look at those evil people in central government not give me the money I promised to you. Okay, but that's not how it works now. But anyway, the point being, I actually think that Rory has done it again and presaged the actual issue here.
Of course he has.
I don't know whether you can see this, but this is Big Ben and the House of Parliament. The hands of Big Ben are at 5 minutes to midnight, because I think...
Well, that's a nice detail.
It is a very nice detail. It's a lot easier to see when you actually have a copy in hand.
Which I do.
Yeah, but because I think this is the 5 minutes to midnight position of the Blairite system.
Yes.
And no, but I really mean it. And it became really obvious during the PMQs. This issue of Islander is about what shall be done or what must be done. And it's full of excellent essays, especially by myself, but also by lots of other people who are really, really nailing down the problems without casting a veil of sentimentality across it. There are some real structural issues that we face. I mean, one of my favorite ones is actually by a guy called Reactionary Reading Law, where he's saying, look, don't become an influencer, actually. Go and become a man of the system, which is the opposite of what you've done, incidentally.
Yes.
But he is right, though, actually. We have enough influencers. What we don't have is enough people on the inside actually pulling levers, actually being the cogs in the system to make things happen. It's actually not hard to find influencers. Influencers are 10 a penny.
Yes.
Having good, well-trained people who are on the inside actually doing things, well, that's what the Blairites did. They didn't rely on influencers.
Well, and also you have more credibility if you do that for years and then become an influencer. It doesn't rule it out entirely.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's not that you can't become an influencer.
Yes.
But this is what the Blairites did. But anyway, so leave a link in the description, shop.locis.com, go and get that. So I was watching Starmer's last PMQs, and it really, honestly, right, it really felt like the cover here, right? The entire country is not Westminster, right? And this, it very much felt like it was an island unto itself that didn't realize how late the hour was. They're very chummy in this. They're all incredibly chummy with Starmer. It's like, but he is being kicked out because everyone hates him.
Or very tangible failures. Yes.
It's kind of difficult to put into words, yeah, just how loathed Starmer is. People thought that Jeremy Corbyn was hated, but it was nothing compared to Starmer. Starmer backstabbed Corbyn and kicked him out of the party.
Yes. Right. I would go a bit further and say the entire chamber, the entire House of Commons is loathed.
Oh, absolutely.
And as you point out, they're very chummy. It's like, look, the system goes on for another day. It's had its renewal cycle. New leaves have you know, shooted. You know, we're all okay in here. That was the sentiment that I was getting from it.
Oh, it's mad. Even Richard Tice stood up and said, "Oh, if England win, can we have a bank holiday?" Like, Richard, one of your party members, an ex-MP, has just been murdered.
Yes.
By what appears to be a leftist. Nigel Farage came out and said that Keir Starmer told him that it was a burglary gone wrong. Why would he say that? Why would Starmer lie to Farage over who murdered Anne Widdecombe? Like, sorry, there's literally blood in our political system right now.
Yeah.
Like, one of the right-wing party that is currently at probably about 23% of the polls now, it's not been doing great, but has been leading in the polls for the last year and a half, has just had one of their spokespeople murdered in her house, and the counter-terrorism police are now investigating it because it was a targeted murder and obviously political. And they're acting like chums in the Houses of Parliament after Starmer spent his entire 2 years calling Nigel Farage and Reform basically Nazis who are evil and outside of the law. And someone's been murdered. Like, sorry, do you think that the charisma of the bully pulpit that the Prime Minister has no influence on this at all? Of course it does.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Anne Widdecombe was stochastic. How do you say it?
Stochastic terrorist.
Yeah.
Victim of stochastic terrorism.
But, I mean, the murder of Anne Widdecombe was obviously despicable and terrible and all those things. But, you know, she still was in her late 60s and 70s. We're at the point where we get...
78.
Okay, 78.
Quite old.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're at the point where we're getting little girls hacked to death in dance studios. I mean, the level of failure in this country is epic.
It's at every single level and no one is protected from it. That's the thing that is important to remember. Yes. Right. So David Armis, Joe Cox, Anne Widdecombe. Like, you can be a high-ranking politician in this country, an elected member of the House of Commons, or a venerable grandee of British politics, and you can still just be murdered.
Yep. There have been 6 MPs murdered since the Second World War, 4 of them Conservatives, 1 Ulster Unionist, and 1 Labour.
Yeah.
They always focus on the Labour one, obviously.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
And, I mean, like, with the Anne Widdecombe thing, I saw lefties being like, Blairite types, being like, oh, Anne Widdecombe's family wouldn't want us to politicise this. It's like, I think we know what Anne Widdecombe would have said about this. Like, she was political her entire life, and she was an outspoken supporter of Nigel Farage. I think he's got her endorsement to politicise this, actually.
Yes.
But the point is, again, it felt like this very remote island that's completely detached from the rest of the country that's at 5 minutes to midnight. It's
It's very Versailles, isn't it?
It very much, very much. As in, they don't seem to realise that the revolution is coming, right? They are literally being murdered. I mean, at one point in this, Anne Widdecombe comes up and Keir Starmer says, well, I think we should have... they have a shield for the murdered MPs, right? A decorative shield. And he proposed a decorative shield for Anne Widdecombe. Now, Anne Widdecombe was an MP until 2010, I think it was. Mm. But she was an MP for like 17 years or something like that. So that's totally appropriate. But why do MPs keep getting murdered in this country? Like this, I can't.
Well, and little girls at dance studios and people just walking down the street.
Sure.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see the, you know, the murders that the regular people have to suffer. But they're not exempt from this, as is recognised in this. And yet they're all just acting chummy, relaxing, as if they're on the ship of fools at the end of history. And there is nothing actually to worry about. And it was just so maddening to watch it. And the fact that they're all in it together became so profoundly obvious, right? I mean, here's Ed Davey calling Keir Starmer a true patriot. Watch this.
So shall I say to the Prime Minister that although we've not always agreed, I always admired the way he has led his party. I've always admired the way he's been a true patriot. And I always admire the way he's worked with so many people across this House to do the best for the national interest. And we thank him for his public service.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine, like, an opposition leader genuinely having that opinion. In what way is Keir Starmer a true patriot? He's a true patriot for the liberal order.
Yes.
He's a true patriot for the system, but not in any way for the people of the country. I mean, he literally called Muslims the face of modern Britain and has pledged $250 million to defend mosques and synagogues and whatnot. And that, for Ed Davey, is, oh, you're a true patriot. So, right, okay. Okay, that's interesting.
I mean, they are very chummy within the House of Commons. I mean, the PMQs is a bit of a performance thing, but I mean, I used to spend a lot of time in the Commons and say, take the Strangers Bar overlooking, which has got a nice little balcony thing. Yes, it's generally true that you'll get, say, clusters of Conservatives and clusters of Labour sitting together. But when they're up at the bar, they're all very pally. They all know each other. They're all exchanging jokes, you know, genuinely happy to see each other. I mean, it is a cabal of people who are pushing, as you say, liberalism.
Yes. They're all on the same side for this Blairite liberal order. Mm. And, of course, Keir Starmer decided to back Count Binface, thinking he was being very clever. Again, just... Mr. Speaker, they're intending to spend the summer arguing with the bin. My advice to everyone is put your vote in the bin. Well, everyone was like, all right, so you're backing Count Binface then.
Absolutely the wrong thing. If you want Binface to win, you don't say anything at all. You don't identify him with the left.
No. He's identified him with the system.
Yes, because otherwise people like us, if it was just a neutral, not Farage, you know, a lot of people could sit on their hands. But as soon as you start doing this, we're going to be like, okay, we'll vote for Kai Stevenson's then.
You know what's so funny as well is that Count Binface today has had an article published in The Spectator defending the Odyssey film. It's like, what a weird... I mean, it's literally under the name Count Binface. And he's going through the Odyssey about how great the Odyssey film is and why Nolan's interpretation is avant-garde.
Has he seen it?
I assume he must have done. But the point is, like, okay, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because it starts stitching all of these things together.
Yeah.
Right? There's a direct through line from Keir Starmer to Count Binface to the Odyssey in what they all feel is part of their own magisterium, their own little imperial dominion, their own fief, right? It's the things that they bring together to themselves. And, for example, like, for us, I've seen this a lot with... I'll cover this in another video at some point. I've seen this a lot with, like... The lefties, the Blairite types, the leftists, not specifically the sort of like Marxist types, but the sort of libtard types, you thinking the Odyssey is owning the chuds. And it's like, right, that's really interesting how bound up in Christopher Nolan's decisions about his casting choices and the kind of story that he's telling the Odyssey is the liberal order and the liberal morality and the liberal ideology.
Yes.
That they view as an attack on the chuds, attack on the reactionaries, attack on the right wing. And Binface is like, yeah, no, I support this Odyssey. And Sam's like, yeah, no, I support Binface. And by extension, anything Binface supports. And so you can see the whole thing taking on this its own sort of discrete layer away from the rest of the society. And again, this is why this cover is just so bang on the money as usual. It's like, yeah, no, they are totally detached from the rest of us. Anyway, so yeah, I'll cover all this another time, but it was just something I saw just before we started recording, and it was just like, that's so strange, but I can't get it out of my head. Like, the thing is revealing itself to be so separate from the rest.
I'm still kind of confused how Peter Lenongo as Helen of Troy and Ellen Page as the greatest warrior that Achilles has ever known is somehow owned. How am I supposed to stop and rethink my life as a result? I don't
You have been owned because you're a chud,
right?
But the point is,
okay,
they're all in it together. Right?
Yes.
They know they're all in it together. Yes. But even Kemi Badenoch came out to endorse Count Bimface. It's like, right, that's very interesting, isn't it? Because if it wasn't for Blairism, Kemi Badenoch would not have been picked as the diversity hire to lead the Conservative Party. So this is revelation that she knows she's also in it together. Mm. And man, was she chummy with Keir Starmer. The whole, you know, normally she can be a bit inappropriately bitchy, actually, and go a bit inappropriately hard. But she was actually very nice to him throughout this. And of course, she wants a televised debate between Count Bimface and Nigel Farage, and she backs Bimface. And it's like, that's such a weird hill for you all to die on. You know, it's a weird way of you all like drawing ranks. Like,
they can't do it. They can't do it, can they? I mean, they did to disarm Farage's move. The right thing to do was to not stand. That disarms it. But they can't help themselves from then making Bimface
their avatar.
The establishment candidate.
Yeah.
So you were robbing. You successfully robbed Farage of the "it's me versus the establishment."
Yes.
And then you immediately gave it back to him because you just can't help yourself.
They literally could not help themselves. So endorsed by the Conservative leader, the Labour leader, he's already been endorsed by Andy Burnham.
Yeah.
He is, I'm afraid to say, what they are prepared to stand as a candidate against Nigel Farage.
Yeah.
A clown candidate who dresses like a bin.
Oh, and a follow-on from our last week's chat. I mean, first of all, the comments drew my attention to that Posh George was not quite as hard done by as I thought. There is actually some dodgy stuff in there. It was a bit of entrapment, but it was a bit dodgy with his money laundering. And the second thing is, you know, I said that I liked Count Bimface at 11-1. As soon as the Anne Widdecombe thing happened, again, massive. I mean, just to call back to that previous episode, what we were saying is what he did wrong was not disclosing it.
Yeah.
And we should live in a world where politicians, let's say a Labour politician who's about to become prime, Andy Burnham, had taken $5 million from a trans rights charity or children's mutilation charity.
Might have done.
I would want to know that, and therefore it's important. But they didn't make it about that. They made it about the money itself.
Yeah.
And he always maintained it was about security. So as soon as Anne Widdecombe happened, I think he's just a lock. I mean, even at 11-1, I don't like Bimface now.
Well, I wasn't going to include it in this, but incidentally, Shabana Mahmood said that she was indeed going to meet with Nigel Farage and provide him security. Because, I mean, one of his leading politicians has just been murdered in cold blood. His argument about security is actually a sound one, because you guys have been terrorizing him by telling everyone that he is evil and without outside of the law and outside of moral consideration. Yeah.
Oh, my whole life living in this country, just in case there's any Americans or anything watching, and it's probably the same for you guys actually as well, is my whole life I've been taught one thing above all others, is that Nazis are evil and you must do whatever. In fact, you are encouraged to fantasize about going back in history and murdering baby Hitler.
There are movies about this kind of thing.
Oh, exactly. And then they build up their political adversaries and paint them basically as Nazis.
Yeah.
I mean, the language that the establishment always uses is far right, which is basically to say, look, you know, like the Conservatives or whoever the Conservative proxy is at the time, only more so, and they're also about that close to invading Poland.
Yeah.
So I mean, they've done this, they were
literally calling Farage a teenage Nazi the other day. Exactly. That he was a little Hitler when he was in college. It's like he was 15. Calm down. You know, But the point being is that they know what they're doing, right? They have, weirdly enough, they all take into themselves this cultural attitude. They're standing on top of the hill. They're forming their ranks with one another.
Yeah.
And so they're treating Starmer like a martyr.
Yes. Quickly on the security point. I mean, I think the reason why Mahmood is now offering him security is because they understand they can only push that so far. I mean, let's say Nigel Farage.
Of them have to be murdered before it's evident?
Yeah. Well, I mean, put it this way. I hope this doesn't happen. I don't want a hair on his head harm. But if Nigel Farage was assassinated, a political assassination, even me, somebody bloody Restore Britain on the front of my laptop.
Yeah, I would come out for Nigel Farage.
I would. I could well end up voting Reform if Nigel Farage is assassinated, because I just want to say screw you to the people who think that that's okay, an okay way of doing politics.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the last thing they need is him actually assassinated. They just need him terrified and unable to focus.
Well, I mean, every time Nigel Farage has been assaulted, I've come out and supported him.
Yes.
Even if I don't, even if I'm not going to vote for him. Like, it's unacceptable that he's treated the way he's treated. I mean, it's unacceptable that any of us are, but especially him, because he is, whether you like it or not, kind of like, personification of right-wing politics.
He's the lightning rod at the moment.
Yeah. He is the lightning rod, yeah. So the way that they treat him is the way they're going to treat any of us. Mm. And Nigel Farage has got a lot more gravitas than most right-wing politicians in this country, whether you like him or not. Yeah. He's played the game, he's been through the ringer, and he knows how these things work. So at the end of the day, when they're being so cavalier about all of this, and again, they close ranks, even Kemi Badenoch has closed ranks against him on this. She sided with Starmer on this. It's like, that is pathetic. That is genuinely pathetic. But that's what the establishment is. The Conservatives want the Labour Party, like Peter Hitchens said. The zombie party's propping each other up. They can't let the other fall. So she comes to his defence rather than going to Nigel Farage's.
I've heard rumours that the people who can think in Labour, and there's not many of them,
McSweeney.
Yes, are desperate to see the Conservatives revived as the main opposition.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Anyway, so this is Starmer's goodbye speech, which it's about 2 minutes long, but we'll watch it just because it's worth it.
Mr. Speaker, this will be my last answer from this dispatch box. Every Prime Minister knows when they take up the torch that the day will come when they have to pass it on. That day has come for me. This is the end of my political journey. In 6 years, went from historic defeat in 2019 to historic victory in 2024. And in 2 years in government, I leave the country in better shape than I found it. Yeah. I am proud of everything that we have achieved. Mr. Speaker, can I just take time to say to you, Mr. Speaker, and all those who work for the House and in our constituency offices, thank you for all your hard work. Yeah. To our civil service, thank you also for all your hard work. To my political team, many of them are here today, who came on this journey with me, thank you so much for everything you have done and being prepared to walk through fire for me. To my colleagues on these benches, I am proud of all we have achieved together and proud of each and every one of you. To my successor and each of you, I will give my full support. To all colleagues across the House, can I wish you good health and happiness? To all those in the gallery whose lives have been changed or improved by this Labour government, and all across the country who struggle to be seen or heard, you're the reason I came into politics. To my wife and children, I love you. Goodbye.
I've got two quick observations there.
Well, but first,
go on.
He's not being put to death tomorrow. Right? Like,
that was going to be one of my observations. In his head, he is Arnold Schwarzenegger at the end of Terminator 2 being lowered into it. Yeah. I must be sacrificed to protect Blairism.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening.
Yes.
He's being treated like a martyr. Like, until last week, everyone was like, we hate Keir Starmer and we're terrified of him. Yep. And then Andy Burnham manages to win and he gets 330 MPs backing him. So nearly three quarters of the MPs are like, oh yeah, we definitely want Andy Burnham. Total betrayal of Starmer. Yep. Complete backstab. Yet here they are, every single one of them, applauding him like he was the martyr for Blairism. Like
and,
the martyr for the party.
100% by Christmas, we'd be getting articles saying, oh, Starmer wasn't so bad. Maybe we should have stuck with him.
I'm already saying it.
Yes, even if it's as late as Christmas.
Yeah, but it's so wild because he's like, I'm proud to have everything we've achieved and we're leaving the country better than we found it. It's like, why are you being backstabbed by your own party? Like, it's not an act of God that is causing this. You know, a meteor isn't incoming and you're the guy who has to stand there and absorb it or something, right? You're being backstabbed by your own party so they can replace you with Andy Burnham. And they're all cheering you, and everyone's acting like this is being done outside of your control.
Yes, because all of those people behind you, right, they don't understand why you weren't spending more money.
Yeah. And they, again, Like, Starmer's acting like his political career is a sacrifice to save the Labour Party, right?
Mm, and yeah.
And save the Blairite system, to save everything that they're doing. And it's like, okay...
You know, in his head, it's so noble what he's doing.
Yeah, in their heads. That's why they're applauding him. Yeah. That's why they're all like, oh, yeah. And notice the politics of recognition. Oh, for those people who didn't feel seen, that's why I came into politics. I'm sorry, we're the people who don't feel seen because we have one MP representing us in Parliament, yes. Rupert Lowe.
Yes.
Like the rest of you, you've got 649 Blairites... all represent, you feel very seen in any of your, you know, you definitely have representation in the House. We have one guy, you know.
It is something in the liberal mindset that no matter how much they win, they always think of themselves as the victim in the underdog.
The underdog, yeah, yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah.
They've got a very interesting way of mythologizing their own past as well. If you go back and you view any like major incident in liberal philosophy and political history, and they're always the overdog, and they're always doing the wrong thing, and they mythologize. I mean, like, for example, Keir Starmer mythologized in this. So I came in and won this landslide Labour victory.
Yeah.
Well, did you, though? Because actually, Jeremy Corbyn got more votes than you did. What happened is you just happened to be the guy running against Nigel Farage when he was running against the Conservatives and split their vote by a third. Yep. So you got 418 seats that you shouldn't have got and you could never get again.
Yes.
Nigel Farage stood down. Yep. And yet here you are acting as if this was your brilliant politicking that got you to this point. No, it wasn't. It was just a twist of fate. This is the time. Nigel Farage could have done that in 2019, but he didn't. The Conservatives backstabbed us, and so Farage was like, right, okay, I'm going to go for it this time. And you were the result. It wasn't your brilliant manifesto. No. It wasn't your charisma. You didn't win the country over.
It was the beta cuck orbiter who just happened to be there when she got drunk enough and was on as much of a rebound to finally get their moment. That's all it was.
Very much. And so, anyway, Starmer sacrifices himself for the greater good of the system, and they all recognize him as a martyr now.
Mm.
It's the end of his political career, and so, I mean, he'll fail upwards. He'll get speaking gigs, and who knows what else he get. But he'll fail upwards like they always do. And so then we go on to Andy Burnham. Well, the interesting thing is the omens aren't great, right?
Oh, did we lose last night?
Apparently. I don't watch football.
Nor do I.
Apparently we lost 2-1 to Argentina.
Right.
The Argentinian team entirely white.
Okay, now I'm conflicted.
Anyway, Keir Starmer gutted. Wasn't the result we were asking for. Because, of course, you know, everyone was like, well, you know, oh, in fact, that was the point here. Kemi Badenoch here says, well, like Harold Macmillan, you could be a Labour Prime Minister who's in office when England win the World Cup. Which they didn't. They got knocked out. And so he won't be.
That's some good political trivia, knowing who the Prime Minister was in 1966.
Well, you know, she'd obviously looked it up.
The only thing I know about football is that England have never won a World Cup without a Wolverhampton player on the squad, and yet they consistently don't learn from that.
I'm sure there's something to it. But anyway, there are other things that are being done. Like, for example, like Starmer's leaving a bunch of poison pills. Extending the national insurance exemption for Indian workers to 5 years.
Because obviously we need to make it more attractive for Indians to come here.
Yeah. Yeah. And
especially for poor sods like me who spend a lot of time driving on the motorway every morning and evening. We absolutely need more Indian truck drivers.
Yeah. But there are a bunch of them. He's going to... one of his last acts was to make it illegal for 16 and 17-year-olds to use social media after midnight. Which is like, okay, that's great. That's not exactly it's not getting to the heart of any of the real issues of the country. But okay, thank you, Keir.
So you can join the military at that age.
Yeah.
You can get married. You can have kids.
Yeah.
But you can't check your DMs at 1 past midnight.
No.
Right, fair enough.
Keir Starmer has forbidden it.
Yeah, right then.
Even though he's just been kicked out by his own party for being historically unpopular. Anyway, the UK economy is doing great. Did brilliantly under Starmer. I love that meme down there. Total profit, £2.
Basically, UK economy grew 0.1%, margin of error 0.8%.
Yeah.
And these things are actually normally revised down afterwards as well.
Yes, they are. Which is why we
are fair enough.
Outrageous. Anyway, so we've got Andy Burnham. He begins on Monday.
Yep.
He is going to be the new Prime Minister.
The descent begins.
Yeah. Honestly, I think people aren't going to realize just how bad it's going to get how quickly. Because he is just going to be part of the soft left that thinks, well, government spending results in extra money being in the economy.
Well, that's why I kind of set this up right at the beginning with the People's Tribune, which is the image that he's supposed to be in.
Yep.
And people will feel far more betrayed by when the People's Tribune betrays them, when the cold-hearted bureaucrat, because at least the cold-hearted bureaucrat, you're just like, okay, well,
it's what I expected.
He doesn't get it. He thinks in too narrow terms, and so I'm upset by him. But this guy, his whole stick is, I get you, I understand, I connect with you, I'm with you. And when he starts doing it, it's either going to be, well, wait, you are lying the whole way along, or you're just bloody evil because you do know what matters to us. You do know why we're suffering. So he's going to come in and he's going to do all this, cost of living initiatives. That will be the next thing. It'll be a whole bunch of initiatives. And then we get to October for the budget. And maybe if he's lucky, his honeymoon will last. Because what happened in the early days is because he's actually being quite vague about stuff, every part of the Labour coalition gets to project onto him
what they want.
What they want. And they're imagining he's going to do what I want.
Yeah.
But that budget is going to come in October. And actually, he can't do anything because unless he breaks all the fiscal rules or, completely, gets the bond market to cut us off, he hasn't got any more options than Starmer had. So he's going to make all of these, good sounding promises and deliver on none of it. And then all of that Labour coalition who are projecting their hopes onto him, they're going to be like, well, he's not doing any of it.
Where's the money you promised for X, Y, and Z? And he'll be like, well, there isn't any. Because
we tried to tax people and the tax take went down because we're overtaxing people already.
Yeah. Well, in fact, he's going to announce his cabinet on Monday.
Right.
Which shows you how much this has all been well prepared. We should know all of this, shouldn't we? But anyway, suspected that Shabana Mahmood becomes the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Ed Miliband, maybe the Foreign Secretary.
I kind of like Shabana Mahmood for Chancellor because this is my analogy of two people trying to land a plane. You want the person who knows that they don't know anything as opposed to the person who doesn't know that they don't know anything. Because the person who knows that they don't know anything will be talking to air traffic control and taking the advice. So she'd be taking the advice of the Treasury, who, at least within their narrow field, are quite good at what they do. I mean
her expertise is a lawyer.
So, yes, or she's a barrister.
Yeah.
But so, I suppose at least as a barrister, she's been self-employed. So she might have done her taxes once.
Rachel Reeves worked as a helpline assistant at NatWest or whatever it is. So,
But she thinks that she knows.
I know.
So that's my problem. So,
she doesn't know anything. She doesn't know anything about this. What are we doing?
Yeah. And I'm not judging her against everybody in the country who could be Chancellor. I'm judging her against
people in the Labour Party
who could be Chancellor. So she's probably the best choice to make there.
Well, it could have been Ed Miliband, couldn't it?
And I like Ed Miliband for Foreign Secretary because he does have a following in the Labour Party. And if you stick him in the Foreign Office, he probably can't do any harm. I mean, he might start World War III with Russia, but hopefully, apart from that, he might be able to do no harm.
I'm a bit worried about that because I think it'll probably cause diplomatic issues with his lack of tact against... Because, Ed Miliband seems like a nice enough guy, but again, he's obviously a kind of believer in this whole project, which, this is another thing as well. Notice how it's just dragging out the old Blairite types. It's like, okay, no, we're going to have to go back 20 years. Who's still around? Who was involved with Blairism back when it was shiny and new?
It's Burnham and Miliband.
Yeah, it's Burnham, Ed Miliband, David Miliband. Yeah, just drag them all out.
And the other one was Ed Balls, and his wife is now... Is she Home Secretary? She's... wherever the hell she is.
Is she the Foreign Secretary?
Yeah, she might be, actually.
I think she's actually the Foreign Secretary. Be gone. But this is the problem with Blairism. It has completely failed to create a new and competent... generation to take the reins, right? It can't pass the torch because there's no one to pass the torch onto because everyone they would try and pass the torch to is ridiculous.
You know what this is? This is Hollywood, and they're terrified of trying something new.
Yes,
so they're just going to make Fast and Furious 37, and, you know, remake Moana, but this time we're going to use real people for a bit. And it's
have the Odyssey with an African woman as Helen of Troy.
Yes, it's we cannot tell a new story. It has to be that old story that we were doing in the 90s, but we're just going to rehash it forever.
This is exactly the point, is that this is basically the next version of the Boomers. That these people are never going...
We're replacing Boomers with Blairites.
Yes.
Oh, I want the Boomers to live forever now.
Right. These people are never going to see power, right? They're going to get older and older and older, and yet it will be literally like every one of the last, like, five prime presidents in America was born in 1947. You know what I mean? It's going to be just like that, but with Blairites.
Well, actually, Joe Biden wasn't a Boomer. He was a silent generation, but... Yeah.
You know what?
So you can go older, you just can't go younger.
Yeah. But the point is, the Blairites are never going to see power. They're going to just keep recycling older and older people as far into the future as they can because they just do not trust any of the younger generation to take over and they don't have any other manpower that they can rely on. So it is genuinely like Hollywood is turning into. There are various rumors of who's getting what, you know what? Okay, but they're all just rumors. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
Like, it could be anything, but, you know, Wes Streeting and all the usual suspects.
What's Wes Streeting supposed to get?
Not clear, frankly.
Oh, right. And Angela Rayner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But not clear, but they've got a set clique, and that's it forever. So...
Mind you, I mean, I don't think either of us are that au fait on what the Labour backbenchers look like. And it's entirely possible there's not some enormous swathe of talent just waiting to be mined.
You can expect a bunch of the Northerners to be pulled in, Lisa Nandy, Jess Phillips, like people like that.
Yeah, but again, there are people who have just gone round and round. Yeah. It's not like...
They haven't got any bright young stars.
Yes.
You know, no one... Yes. Like, I mean, Kemi Badenoch, whether you like her or not, she is at least a bright young star for the Conservatives.
Fair point.
Right? She is at least someone who wasn't, like... she's a beneficiary of the Cameron policies.
Yes.
But she... is at least like fairly new and doesn't come with a huge amount of
But I had no idea who she was 10 years ago.
Exactly.
Whereas all of these people, I knew more about them 10 years ago because there were more in the headlines back then.
Right. So anyway, Andy Burnham did an Ask Me Anything on Reddit. So this was fairly interesting because at least he gave some answers about some things. But like with everything with Burnham, he's not actually very ideological in the fact that he hasn't got like hard... sort of propositional framework that he's working within. He's just trying to get to, can I just give everyone's money, right?
And actually, this AMA speaks exactly to my point at the beginning. When he's not Prime Minister, he can do stuff like this. He can engage with hypotheticals and trade-offs and all of that kind of stuff. All of that is going to stop it's going to stop right now because he cannot engage in, I'd like to be able to do this for these people because it immediately implies trade-offs or government or Treasury policy.
Yeah. So, you know, he says, well, look, I've been scrutinised by 74,000 members of the public in Makefield. He got 25,000 voting for him. 25,000 people in Makefield are now determining the course of this country. Anyway, so he commits to keeping the triple lock, which is brilliant. Yes. So business as usual. He has determined to fill the $5 billion gap in the defence investment plan, so he's going to try and increase defence spending. With what money?
Coming from where?
Yeah, great question.
Is it these fabled tax rises that...
I'm not taking it from the bloody triple lock, I tell you that.
And didn't I hear that the age of the pension age is going up?
To 68.
68?
From 65.
And this is the thing.
And that's been brought forward 7 years early as well.
Yes.
So we're going to raise it to 68 in 7 years' time.
Right.
But they can't afford to do that, so they're going to have to bring that forward.
This is the thing with making something like the triple lock, which was only supposed to be, I think it was like a 2 or 3 year temporary measure, just for a bit of a catch-up. That's the problem with making something like that the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Because then the system has to bend somewhere. Yeah. And so the people are thinking, I've got my triple lock. But now I'm going to have to wait extra years to get there, and it will go up again. It will go to 70.
I mean, by the time, in 20 years' time, when actually in 20 years time, we don't qualify for the pension now, right? Actually, now we've literally been, so in 25 years time, when hypothetically we qualify for the pension, do we think they haven't pushed that age back further?
I mean, even in my 20s, I did not expect to get a pension.
You know, I guess when I was younger, I assumed that I would, just because I don't know. I didn't know anything about the world, you know, really, in my 20s. But like, looking at it now, yeah, do I think they're going to have kept it at 68? So in 25 years, I'll finally get a pension?
It'll be like the smoking ban. It will go up and it will catch 22. The number of missions you need to fly always go up.
Yeah, absolutely. He's going to try and find the money to bring all the utilities back into public control. Now, I actually agree with public control of a bunch of utilities because I'm a xenophobe and I don't want them owned by foreigners, right? So I've approached this from the right, whereas Burnham has approached this from the left, but we've arrived at the same sort of place. But he actually explains what he means by public ownership and public control of utilities. And
they are publicly controlled. They're regulated up the wazoo.
Obviously. Oh. Like so essentially what he's saying here is, well, I may have made you think...
Here we go. This is what I was describing.
It is exactly what you were describing. Like, you may have got the impression that I thought the government was going to own these things. When actually what I meant was we were going to regulate these things. All right, so business as usual then.
Yes. So sorry, just to be absolutely clear, what I'm going to do is everything that we already have been doing, I'm just going to put a slightly different spin over the top and justify my earlier comments.
Yes, I'm going to make you think that that's not what we've been doing.
Yes.
He says, obviously, that we're taking a new approach to putting essential services back under stronger public control so that we can make them more affordable to people and lower the cost of living. This is what we've done in buses in Greater Manchester.
It'll be a new regulator then, or a watchdog.
Just a regulator. Right. They're already, as you say, they're already regulated up the wazoo. There are a billion quangos regulating everything in this country.
We create a new office of water czar or whatever the bloody hell.
As if we don't have that.
Yes.
Like, so it's just, you know.
Yeah. Oh, and then we take the head of the current regulator and just give him a different title.
So Burnham's already walking these things back.
Yeah.
He thinks he's going to negotiate a return agreement with countries like Afghanistan, which honestly is more practical. I mean, Tom Harwood here is, let's negotiate with the Taliban. It's like, yeah, I don't care. Actually, that's better than...
So he says he is prepared to negotiate, sending
Afghani criminals back to Afghanistan.
Good if he sticks to it.
Sure, but I mean, it might be like with Pakistan at the moment with the grooming gang member.
Yes,
he just got out of jail, and Pakistan's like, no.
Yeah, but in order to do that, you're going to need to pass primary legislation, which does a whole bunch of things, include repeal large chunks of the human rights corpus. Yeah. Right, and you're going to get Labour backbenchers to vote for that without pissing away all their support, which will be going anyway in October when you do the budget.
Yeah, not bloody likely is the answer. It's like,
I don't think so.
I would like to negotiate with Afghanistan. Okay, but the lefty human rights lawyers are going to tie you up in the courts, costing us millions of pounds for decades until you're just no longer the prime.
It can't be done without primary legislation and massive repeals.
But he just doesn't
And Labour backbench are not going to vote for it.
He knows he's not going to win a general election.
So does he actually use the term that he would like to, or he just says yes?
He just says yes.
Right.
Yeah, I'm going to negotiate return agreements with Afghanistan for refugees who have had their asylum claims rejected. Yeah, but they're not going to take them back, and you're not going to be here when the bill comes due on that. So who cares?
Well, that's going to be saying to Ed Miliband, okay, now you're Foreign Secretary, go and have a word with Pakistan and ask them for this. They'll tell you no, but I can say that you've asked.
Heck yes, I'm tough enough.
Yes.
I can't wait till Ed Miliband's negotiate with the Russians. Burnham says that the problem with HS2 is a remote bureaucracy that always wanted to cut costs and wasn't listening to the people whose areas it would affect. Was that the problem with HS2? Is that the reason that Hinkley Point C hasn't been made? The remote bureaucracy wants to cut costs.
Again, a classic example of an answer that he can't give now because he's running the remote bureaucracy. It's not remote from him anymore. He's literally sat in the centre of it. He's got a flat above 10 Downing Street where he lives.
They wanted to build a motorway underneath Stonehenge, which is a great idea. Why not just have, just dig a massive tunnel?
They do loads of the work as well and then just scrap it.
No, they didn't do loads of the work. They did loads of the consultancy.
Oh, that's how they spent the millions.
It cost 180 million and then they scrapped it.
On consultancy?
Then they scrapped it. HS2, Hinkley Point C, it's all the same thing, right? Yeah. There are so many regulatory hurdles that they have to get through. That they have to spend literally millions and millions of pounds to get to a no, you don't want to do this answer, right? The reason that HS2 and Hinkley Point C haven't been done is bureaucracy. It's not because the bureaucracy's trying to cut costs. It's because they need to put fish discos in to make sure the fish don't get sucked into the water intake for the and whatever. That's not the problem.
It literally would have been faster for people in the 1905 to build a tunnel under Stonehenge.
Yeah,
because absolutely. Even though they would have been using hand tools, they would have actually moved dirt out the way.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, he's not going to solve any of the problems. Nothing's getting built.
Oh, yeah. No,
is the point.
Nothing is going
to
happen.
Nothing's going to get built.
Yeah, apart from disappointment.
Yeah. And he says, I'm going to launch the largest council house building project since the post-war period because nothing else will fix the housing crisis.
So I did a Brokenomics with some house developers, and they talked through the range of absurdities that are in their way trying to build houses, and they were legion. I mentioned just one. They had to shut down the site for several nights so that people could stand there with a clicker counting the number of bats that flew over. Right? And that was literally just one of a whole swathe of examples of everything that is stopping housing developers from actually building any bloody houses.
Yeah.
What is he going to introduce another set of primary legislation, repeals all of these regulations, or takes powers away from councils? And no, he's not going to do any of that.
No, because he was a member of the Blairite government that brought all of these things in.
He brought them all in, yes.
He was literally in the government at the time. Then he leaves and becomes mayor of Manchester. Yes. Now he's come back to save the Blairite system. And notice that everything he says is completely within the Blairite system. Launching the biggest council housing building program, what do you think Labour governments have been saying for years? They want to build houses for foreigners. They don't want to reduce the number of foreigners.
Yes.
Like, nothing else will fix it. It's like, well, actually, deporting millions of people would solve our housing crisis.
I love how their line is, deporting millions won't make any difference.
It's mental. It's obviously where it's coming from.
But making the argument that the last hope of the Blairite system
is
not going to undo Blairism.
No, he's not going to undo Blairism, I'm sure. And of course, he's not going to call an election because he's going to work within the 2024 manifesto. But the thing is, haven't we just given up on the 2024 manifesto? We're in the
Even Keir Starmer isn't following the...
Well, exactly. Keir Starmer's like, so in the 2024 manifesto, it wasn't abolish jury trials. It wasn't banning social media. It wasn't this. It wasn't that. It's like, okay, who in the Labour Party is paying attention to the 2024 manifesto? Nobody. But of course, he's not going to call a general election because the Burnham bounce...
It's lose.
The Burnham bounce was about 4 points.
Yeah.
Right? And Labour being...
And it will last 4 weeks to 4 months at most.
And Labour were on about 17 in the polls. So they're still dramatically below Reform. Like, the Burnham bounce has been very minimal. They still can't win a general election.
Yeah, and they haven't solved the underlying problem, which is they're losing something like 17% of their vote to the left, to the Greens.
Well, actually, Burnham has brought back about 4 or 5% of the Greens.
Okay.
Right. So he has brought some of those back.
Okay.
But it's not enough.
Well, and 19% to the right with Reform and Restore.
So he's
bleeding in both directions. Yeah. And he hasn't decided what strategy he's going to use. Are you just going to sit in the middle getting picked apart like a whale carcass floating on the sea being picked apart from both sides by sharks?
Yes.
Or are you going to move in one direction or the other? You can't move right because the Labour backbenchers will rebel. You can't move left without basically just
tanking the
absolutely
system.
Securing the victory of the right.
Yeah.
So you're just going to get picked apart by sharks.
So he's picked whale carcass.
Yes.
So he's not going to call a general election because, of course, that would be suicide. And is he going to try and bring us back into the EU? Yes, I'm going to build a closer relationship with the EU. And I think it's good that the government, because of course he wants to get back into the EU, because of course he's a Blairite and has no original thoughts of his own. He intends to continue the Chagos betrayal for some reason, which is really weird. I don't know why.
He must have got the briefing explaining what it's really all about.
What is it all about?
I'm looking forward to in 30 or 40 years' time reading some political memoir and finding out finally why we are so obsessed with giving this away.
Why we're spending $35 billion to give.
There must be some underlying reason.
But honestly, it's completely opaque. I've looked into it, and the closest I can track it to is that there was a piece of legal advice given at some international court that actually maybe the Chagos Islands should belong to Mauritius.
Yeah, but that sounds like bullshit. I mean,
well, yeah, but that seems to be the only thing that Keir Starmer is running on with the Chagos, and apparently Burnham's like, yeah, I guess that's...
There must be a real reason.
Well, I mean, I would think so, but...
Whatever it is.
Like, you'd expect that some insider would just come and tweet it out or something, right? So people at least know, oh, yeah, okay, what I've heard is this really about this, right?
I mean, the best I can possibly guess with this, it's some broader deal with some other power, like a China or India, where it's like, okay, well, we're going to step away from this now, and because you're a civilization that thinks in terms of decades, it then opens...
In terms of centuries.
Yeah. So it then opens it up for you to take it at some future point, and you're willing with that trade, and in exchange for that, you're going to give us something that we need that we can't talk about now. I mean, it's the best I can do, but God knows what it actually is.
There might be, but there's just no evidence for it.
No, there's no...
It seems to just be...
Guesswork.
The Labour government hate that we own the Chagos Islands and want us to not hate it, not want us to not own it.
Why don't they give away the Falklands? I mean, maybe because it's too emotionally charged?
I think because people know what the Falklands are, right?
Well, we know what the Chagos Islands are.
Yeah, but did the general public know what the Chagos Islands were before Keir Starmer tried to give them away?
No.
Right? They'd never be able to nail them down on a map, whereas people would be like, all right, the Falklands are near South America. You know, they'd probably find, oh, it's the one big island mass near South America, right? It's that, right? Mm. Because of the 82 invasion, no one knows anything about the Chagos Islands, right? But you are right; they probably would give away the Falklands if they could. Mm. Anyway, what have we got next? Right, so he's gonna means test the pensions, which honestly is not a bad idea, because obviously, what's the point in having multi-millionaire wealthy retirees who've got private pensions or assets that are giving them money and whatnot from claiming state pension? I mean, that's actually sensible. So okay, then you've got the wealth tax. So he was on a podcast with Gary Lineker the other day.
Yeah.
It was exactly as insufferable as you can imagine it to be. And Andy Burnham said, well, at some point we might have to ask for a little more, but you know, those decisions are not for now, they're for another day. So millions must go is our slogan, but millionaires must go is their slogan.
The Brokenomics that I'm recording later today, which will come out several days after this, it comes out on Tuesdays, is going to be about wealth taxes.
Yeah.
And just dismantling why they don't work. And
there are loads of examples of it.
Oh, yeah. Every country that does them undoes them a few years later.
Yes. The millionaires in France did this a few years ago, didn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And was it Norway or some of these Nordic countries? They've all done it as well. And a whole bunch of South American countries did it. But they always undo it because it always blows up in their face.
But the point is, they're on a set of rails. Mm. They all know, look, the only way we can make this work is by stealing money from people who have money, because otherwise we just don't get the money.
Yeah, and hope that people with money don't react in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, they're just like, oh yes, please take my hard-earned money. And this is why Tony Blair came out and was like, listen, you need to rein your neck in, mate. You need to wind it in. Blairism cannot be saved by leftism, is basically what he said here. Right, he's warned Andy Burnham against the capital gains tax increase, saying we cannot tax our way to prosperity, because Burnham is thinking about a capital gains tax in line with income tax, despite warnings that this could lead to tax receipts falling, which they will. The Tony Blair Institute for Global Change issued this stark warning, said such a move would send precisely the wrong message at precisely the wrong time. Writing for The Telegraph, a senior analyst at the Institute has said, taxing our way to prosperity is both bad policy and bad politics. In a world of rapid technological change, Britain's prosperity is not guaranteed. I mean, do you feel like we're in a prosperous country at this point?
Yeah.
We have to optimise for it. Britain's next leader has the potential to set out a new stall for growth and security, and they must not squander it. He argued that Britain sorely needs long-term investment and the willingness to back new businesses, technologies and ideas. We must be a place where entrepreneurs feel they can take risks, build companies and be rewarded for it, all the while contributing to jobs and growth. So you can see how far that Blairism has drifted from Blair, right? Because there was a point where Karl Marx came out and said, well, I'm not a Marxist, judging by what the Marxists are saying and what they think we should do. And it's Blair's getting to that point. It's like, well, I'm not a Blairite, says Tony Blair.
Funnily enough, this has already happened with economic policy, because John Maynard Keynes would not recognise modern Keynesianism. Yeah. You know, he was all about you run massive surpluses whenever you can, so that you then run a deficit when it goes bad. Yes. And we just run a deficit the entire time. But the bastardization of the misunderstood version of Keynesianism is the religion in every central bank, every treasury around the world. And it's quite worrying if Blairism does the same journey, where the bad, misunderstood, but unimplementable version of Blairism becomes baked in on the political side going forward. Which, and,
I mean,
yeah.
The thing is, you're appealing to a system and philosophy that has people within it that actually understand it, right? That would be able to say...
the first generation always do.
Well, this is why Tony Blair is coming out and saying, don't do this.
Yes.
What you need, and, you know, for you... I've got many complaints with Blair, but one thing he did deliver was economic growth. And if you watch, up until about 2007, actually Britain is growing quite quickly. Because Blair actually cared about making sure that there were companies in this country that had money that they could spend.
I mean, it helped a lot that he was running the Tory fiscal playbook until 2004. So that helped him a lot, yeah.
But absolutely, right? But the point is, he understood the importance of this. And this is what he's coming out and saying to him now.
Oh, yeah, he didn't instinctively hate millionaires just because they existed.
No. Yes. And I mean, they said, increasing capital gains tax to the level of income tax would undermine those incentives and send entirely the wrong signal. As in, yeah, what you're doing actually is penalising people for being successful.
Yep.
How dare you make some money in this country? Hand it over. It's the meme of the government being like, where's my money?
Well, because leftists think that there's a fixed pot of wealth, and if somebody is wealthy, it must be because they stole it from somebody else. That's how they think.
But they also think wealth is inevitable, right? They think a priori wealth exists, and it's just distributed somehow.
Yes.
And therefore, why is it being distributed in an unequal way?
Yes.
Whereas, in fact, wealth doesn't exist in the abstract, and it has to be physically created by labor, and people want to be rewarded for their labor, and if they're not, then of course they just don't bother creating that wealth.
The state of nature is us wandering naked through the forests, picking berries and picking through carcasses and then
freezing
dying
to death,
and then dying at 24. That's the state of nature. that's what it looks like when we're all equal.
Yes. And none of the people in labor are bright enough to understand this at this point. Right, this is why Tony Blair from the outside has to be like, listen guys, you're going to ruin everything. And this is why I've been saying, look, I think this basically is accelerationism. Anyway, the next big thing that Andy Burnham's going to do is proportional representation. He has been committed to this.
Well, hang on. About three or four tabs ago, he was going to stick within the Labour Party manifesto. And this is the hugest constitutional change of my lifetime, much more so than leaving the EU.
Yeah, what's the mandate for this? 25,000 people in Makerfield? I don't think so.
Well, and they weren't asked to vote on this either.
No, they were not. But he definitely wants proportional representation. He's been committed to this for many years, and he vows to overhaul the electoral system and to transform British democracy if he gets into number 10.
So, I mean, this is a real problem for Labour, because there's a constitutional precedent that you take this to a referendum, which we had in 2011 or whatever it was.
Which they lost.
Yeah. So, I mean, but the thing is, nowadays, Labour are just changing the voting age and scrapping jury trial without even bothering to do anything, really.
They don't have to have any mandate at this point.
Yeah, they don't even have the level of consultation if you were trying to dig a bloody hole under Stonehenge. They just do it. So, are they just going to do this? I mean, they kind of have to if they want to remain a political force in this country.
If they want to continue existing as a political party,
yes,
sure. But yeah, no, I think that they will. Right, he's been saying this for a long time. Like, this is from back in May, but he's been saying this for a long time. And he says this: I'm committed to proportional representation. I think it would change the political culture. I don't see how first past the post and the point scoring inherent within it lifts Britain out of the doom loop it is in. But is it first past the post that's put us in a doom loop? We've had that for over 100 years.
It's interesting that I don't remember Annie Burnham saying this all the time Labour could win a majority.
He probably did, actually. Because, really? Well, yeah, proportional representation is a philosophical canard that the continental Europeans have had well, since basically the French Revolution, right? Because what they're trying to do is make the Parliament accurately represent the country. They're like, literally, like a map represents a continent.
Oh, so we're going to get the death penalty?
No.
Right.
Right. Yeah, no. Absolutely not. because even though they want it to represent the landmass, the people, they also have a normative teleological goal, which means they have to abolish oppression, suffering, death penalty. You know, they have to provide everyone with a certain standard of living and things like this. So there's the, I mean, this is an inherent contradiction in the liberal philosophy anyway, but the point is Andy Burnham probably is going to push this through. And if he doesn't, it will be in the face of what he genuinely wants to do, which is push it through. So the question is, what would it look like in Britain? So we do have proportional representation in some voting systems in this country, right?
Yeah.
So we've got...
And just a very quick note, proportional representation could mean one of dozens of different systems. So it depends which one you pick and what formula you pick and all the rest of it.
Yeah, as you can see, here's a list, right? So in the House of Commons, we have first past the post, which, to be honest with you, the more I've looked into proportional representation, the more I've decided, yeah, no, it should be winner-take-all, actually. Because this proportional representation is kind of like voting for losers. So if you can't win, then I don't want you in Parliament. Like, if you can't just win outright, I don't think you should be there, right? But the Scottish Parliament has the additional member system, the Welsh Senedd has the closed list proportional system, and the Northern Ireland Assembly has the single transferable vote.
So if I'm right, the additional member system is where it's mostly first past the post, but then there's a whole bunch of... There's a bucket for PR that gets added on.
Yeah, so, well, what happens... with the additional member system is that each voters in Scotland have two votes.
Ah, right.
The first vote is the vote for a constituency member, and the second is for a party, and this is done on a regional basis. So the votes for the constituency member are counted using first past the post, as the same as UK Parliament. The candidate with the most votes wins the constituency seat, and 73 of the 129 members are elected in this way. The second vote acts as a top-up vote. Again, this just seems like cope, doesn't it? So this is, it's like welfare for voting.
Yeah,
right.
And bear in mind, we Restore Sport are saying this.
Yeah,
for the early days of Restore, would help us massively.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have way more than one MP.
Yeah,
if it changed the first past the post,
but we will never get anywhere because
no one will ever form a majority.
Yeah, because it will be leftist coalitions.
Yeah,
and probably including the Tory party in that.
Yeah,
forever.
Which is why, even if they sacrifice the Labour Party on the altar of multiculturalism and Blairism, they know that forever they'll still get the agenda put into action.
Yep.
Right?
They just do it with the Greens, the Lib Dems and the Tories.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They're more than happy to. So the second vote acts as the top-up vote, providing 56 additional members to the Parliament. And these members are elected to represent 8 parliamentary regions with 7 different available seats. Voters cast their vote for the party or independent in their region. Any parties contesting a region publish a fixed list of candidates. This has changed slightly in Wales with the closed list proportional system, which means that voters cast one vote for a political party rather than an individual, with the exception of independent candidates who are on ballots as individuals rather than parties. But surely that makes independent candidates far less viable, because rather, you'd have to remember an independent candidate for every vote that you have, rather than just the party that you wanted. Political parties can list up 8 candidates for each constituency. The seats are allocated based on the share of votes each party gets, using the Dahont formula, which, again, the fact that they have to reference all of these foreign formulas shows that this is not an indigenous way of doing politics in this country.
When I first started voting, they didn't even mention the party.
Yeah. Why would you?
Then they started mentioning the party. Then they started putting logos on it. They're basically, they're taking you as far away as possible from a individual to a collective.
Yeah, because an individual who is like mapped in the constituency is someone you will personally know. I mean, this is actually the reverse is how Andy Burnham won Makerfield. Notice he didn't put Labour on any of his messaging.
Nope.
He said, "For us, vote Andy." Yep. His picture, no Labour symbol. No. I appreciate that the abstraction of party politics has gotten away from everyone, and I'm going to go under that and go to the personal popularity and relationships you have with me.
But now that I'm leading the Labour Party, I want everyone else to be voted on solely because they're Labour.
Exactly. So anyway, Northern Ireland has the single transferable vote. Voters are presented with a list of candidates and rank their preferred candidates in order of preference. To gain a seat, a candidate needs to receive a certain number of votes, which is a quota, and that varies across the constituencies. The droop quota is calculated by dividing the total votes cast by one more than the number of available seats, then adding one.
So that previous one, I mean, that's awful, because we would get precisely, you know, we would get our ballot paper. Let's say we were doing it on a national level. I mean, I know it doesn't exactly work like this, but we would put Rupert Lowe or Restore as first.
Yeah.
And then we'd be like, well, we don't want anyone else. Whereas if you're on the left, you can put the Greens first as your first preference, then Labour, then the Conservatives, and then Reform.
And that's precisely the point of it, is it's to avoid the idea of splitting the vote. So you can just, well, you know, if I'm, because theoretically they're thinking, right, okay, you'd vote Reform, then you'd Restore, then Reform, then the Conservatives. So you haven't actually split your vote because someone on the right is going to get it. But again,
I don't want that because nobody else is going to do deportations.
Well, exactly. But also, it's kind of the same. It's kind of like the Jacob Rees-Mogg socialism, but for votes, right? Mm. There's a fixed number of votes and there are a fixed number of parties, and the system will divvy up into the various parties the votes that you have, because it is captured, this thing. No, it is this for the right, it is this for the left, and never will you have something outside of this system.
Well, and that's very good for liberalism, because let's say if you go in there and you just put one vote, you're going to feel a bit silly. So you end up, most people,
there's no nothing lost by just taking a bunch.
So yeah, but that means whoever wins, you're vested in it.
Yes.
You can't say, I reject this system, this liberal system, because, oh, actually, no, my fourth choice did get in, so I did vote for them in a way, and therefore I'm vested in the system.
But also it prevents an outside insurgency from coming in and overthrowing the system, right? So, a quarter of the people might have number one vote for radical outsider, but then if they vote 2, 3, and 4 for the right wing of the insiders, or on the greens, on the left, you've got, okay, I really want the radical Greens. But I'll vote the Lib Dems and Labour.
Well, the more poignant example, there'll be radical Islam 1, Greens 2, Labour 3, yeah.
Right, yeah, yeah. So no matter what happens, like that radical party will get a slice of the vote, but because they don't win, it'll be the other votes that are transferred or that count. So the system itself is protected from these outsiders.
And then you're vested in it through your tertiary vote.
Your energy has gone into the vote anyway that will never get you the thing that you want. So the same thing there. So these are the likely options that we'll have. None of them good, I think. Just first past the post. I want raw Darwinism, right? Winner takes all, first past the post. Yeah, it's given us Keir Starmer. But, I mean, at least Keir Starmer has done things, right? What they're promising is a system that will get nothing done. And we can see this from European politics.
Oh, everything in British politics is about preserving the status quo. Sure. Everything.
Which I guess, you know, no wonder they're going to adopt European politics. The next thing is the supplementary vote they have in Manchester. This is how the Manchester mayoral elections are called. And so instead of voting for just one candidate, voters can mark a first choice and a second choice. If the candidate is the first choice of more than half the voters, then that candidate wins immediately. But it's very unlikely you're going to get that.
You redistribute the second.
Yeah, if nobody wins more than half, only the top two candidates stay in the contest. And then they make everyone come back to pick between them, and the ballots are checked again. So the first choice is, if your first choice is one of the final two, your vote stays with them. If your first choice was knocked out, but your second choice was one of the final two, your vote is added to their total instead. And so this is, again, designed to stop vote splitting, so you can, you know, vote Greens and then Labour if you want. But because a smaller number will always vote Greens, that Green guy gets knocked out. So you've got the Greens and the Tories. Labour and the Tories. Well, the Greens can get, you know, however many votes. But if Labour get more secondary votes, which they probably will, you end up with Labour, even if you're really voting for Greens. So
if we had to have a PR system, I'd probably hate this one less.
Yeah.
I don't want it, but still.
It's probably the least contemptible of the PR systems. But the point is, we're still getting it. Right, we're probably still going to get something like this. And these are just the PR systems that we use in this country. So I assume when Burnham does do this, which
they can probably find a more French one.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe you can, but he'll probably adopt one of these systems. So the point being, he's got no mandate. for any of this, and he's desperately like the, all of them. They feel like they're at the end of the tether, right?
Yep.
You can tell they feel at the end of the tether. So this is again why Rory's cover here just really,
yes,
really smashes at home. Like they're right at the 5 minutes to midnight end of being at the top of the country's concerns, and you can feel the detachment. You can feel them drifting away from what people are actually asking for. And yet they don't know why, and they can't solve it. No. Anyway, link to Islander in the description. We'll see you next time, folks.